but I passed the breath test. This is McDaniel Reynolds with the Reynolds Defense Firm, and we specialize in one thing. We represent good people facing DUI charges. While you know that it's illegal to drive with a .08 or greater blood alcohol content, not everyone knows that you could be arrested in Oregon for an alcohol DUI even if you blow well under a .08. This is a pretty loose standard, and it's a way that many of the good people we represent find themselves needing our help when they thought they were doing everything right. The Reynolds Defense Firm. We're solid, we're here if you need us, and we are very good at what we do.
You've got the home of the truth. Back to the bald-faced truth with John Canzano on 750 The Game.
University of Oregon basketball coach Dana Altman joining us now. Coach, let's start by talking about, you know, how does your day start? Do you have a routine in the morning that you start with? Is it a cup of coffee? Is it a newspaper? Is it a walk? What do you do in the morning?
Well, it's usually more than one cup of coffee. I'm not a real good sleeper, so now it starts with two or three cups, try to get going a little bit, sit with my wife and discuss the day a little bit, and just head to the office. So it's pretty much a routine every day.
Does it help to kind of start your day not talking basketball? Like if you talk about, you know, the news of the day or whatever's on your wife's mind that day or what she's doing, does it help to kind of have that refocusing of there's a world going on outside of basketball?
Absolutely. You know, I try not to bring all my troubles home and Reva every now and then wants to talk a little basketball, but mostly we talk about the family, the grandkids, what's going on, events, but we don't talk a lot of basketball, which I do appreciate.
Dana Altman, University of Oregon men's basketball coach, our guest. All right, three grandkids. I know they're younger, but would you want to coach them someday? Would that be something Grandpa would want to do? I mean, they're like 4 and 6 years old. I think the two of them in there. But how, would you ever want to be their coach on a youth basketball team or a young basketball team?
I would. I'd love to do that. I don't know if they'd want me around. You know, that'd be the second part of that question. But to answer your question, I'd love to do that. Love to spend time with them and coach their little teams. That'd be great.
This season, it's been tough, and I think you went through a spell like this last year where, you know, it was probably felt like a grind. But last year, you ended up figuring it out, and your guys figured it out, and you played some really good basketball down the stretch. Do you foresee that? Can you see that coming? Did you see that coming last year as the season was going on?
No, last year, you know, we had a very old group, mature group, with great leadership, TJ Bamba, Brandon Angel, Keyshawn. You know, those guys were really focused. This year, you know, our guys want to do it. We just excuses. We've been banged up at key spots. You know, Jackson not getting started, you know, the first 6 weeks of the season. Nate's been banged up now, missed, you know, three games, and KJ missed the last one. You know, those are three guys we're really depending on because of their experience, and especially here early in the season, they know how we want to play. And so we've really had trouble executing our offense. We've really had trouble, you know, getting defensively. The communication has been really poor. And because of that, we've given up a lot of easy baskets. And we're not near where we should be at this point in time. And to get there, we need to get everybody healthy. We've had practice all week, but most of the guys have been out. It was one of those weeks I was really hoping that we could make some progress, but Nate continues to be nagged by an ankle. KJ's been out because he's still sick. Jackson missed yesterday's practice. Dev's been out all week with the groin. So it's a work in progress, but I think the first step is trying to get everybody healthy and then try to get everybody on the same page execution-wise offensively, and our organization just has to improve defensively to get some stops.
All right. You mentioned about, you know, sort of the communication on the defensive side. I've heard coaches talk about that. How do you get young players to talk? Because sometimes when they're out there playing, they go quiet for some reason. How do you really get them to communicate and talk, especially in a loud arena where, you know, that really helps a team when it comes to team defense?
It's always been a problem, but, you know, I've noticed in the last, you know, 7-8 years, I think it's been even more so. You know, the guys communicate so much with text messages. You know, we used to go to restaurants and, you know, the problem was to keep them quiet, you know, because we'd get in there and everybody started talking. Now it's trying to get them to talk. You know, we go to a restaurant to have a team meal and they'll look at their phones all meal, you know, and, so it's really become a different and a bigger problem to get guys to communicate on the floor and talk. It helps if you have a couple alpha dogs that, you know, really want to dominate. And, you know, back when we had Dylan Brooks and Dylan Ennis and Jordan Bell in that group, one of the reasons, you know, our defense was always in the top 20 back then, they just communicated so well. And we had a bunch of talkers. You know, Brooks was talking all the time. Dylan Ennis was talking all the time. Jordan Bell was talking all the time. We had a bunch of guys that really enjoyed, you know, communicating on the defensive end, getting stops. And it was, they took a lot of pride in it. You know, most of the guys now, we just getting them to talk. And I don't know if they're afraid to make a mistake, you know, but if you're decisive and you tell your teammates what you're doing, you know, it sets a tone and everybody can play off that. And you get into problems when you don't talk and you're not decisive and two guys are going to the same guy, or, you know, you mess up your ball screen coverage. So communication is really important. Covers up a lot of mistakes that you can make on the defensive end. And obviously, we're not doing that right now.
Everybody talks about offense, and I know young players like to focus on how many points they got, how many rebounds they got. How do you get young people to buy into defense?
That, too, has become a little more difficult because of, you know, the media. Everybody focuses on the points. Their parents always have. Their girlfriends always have. But now we got agents involved, and they're focused in on it. So we added another layer to the equation of everybody worried about how many shots they're getting, how many points they're getting. You know, it's a game that involves defense, which everybody knows travels. And, you know, the ball doesn't always go in, but defensively you can always put in great effort, the boards. And then the offense, it's three phases, and you have to be good in all three. You know, there are not many Final Four teams or Elite Eight teams that aren't in the top 30 defensively. And, you know, offense is a big part of the game. You got to score buckets, but there's a lot of different ways to win games. And some nights that ball just doesn't go in. But defensive effort, defensive communication, effort on the boards, those things, you can control those a little bit more than you can control whether that three ball's going in any particular night.
Coach, the you know, the buy-in that you get, you mentioned agents, and, you know, I cringed when you said that, because I go, this is I don't know if I'll ever be comfortable with that in college basketball. But how much do you have to deal with it, and how big a headache is that?
Well, you know, big part of coaching is trust, and you know, I really admire our football staff. You know, I go over there and spend a lot of time. You know, I used to. Now that our season started, but, you know, the trust that our football team has in our coaching staff. And, you know, coaching is such a big part of trust. And, you know, the players got to trust me, you know. And if they're hearing a lot of different voices, you know, it makes that trust harder to establish. And, you know, big part of coaching is getting the guys to do things they're not comfortable with, things that aren't fun, things that they may not get rewarded for. And to do those things, the players really got to trust you. You know, they got to know that you have their back and that you have their best interest. And, you know, the things that you're doing will lead to success, not only collectively, but for them individually. And the agents add just another layer to that. And so it has been an adjustment, John, over the last few years, trying to, you know, get guys to really believe in what we're talking about, especially when you have guys coming in for 1 year,
yeah.
2 years. Our Final Four team, we had, you know, Dylan was with us for 3 years, Jordan Bell for 3 years, Casey for 3 years. Peyton was just a freshman, but, you know, all the guys on that team had been around for a while and, you know, kind of had a belief in us. And that's been really the case with, you know, our Sweet 16 teams and the teams that have had a little bit more success.
Dana Altman with us, Oregon basketball coach. December 21st, 3 o'clock in Portland, Moda Center. It'll be Gonzaga and you guys on the court. Tickets are available at Ticketmaster for people who want to go. What's that going to be like for you guys to have that game in sort of a neutral site, but really kind of a home game, and play a Gonzaga program that, you know, you've not seen regularly in the regular season?
No, Mark does a great job, and they'll have a lot of fans there, and I hope our fans are excited about a game in Portland. I know Jackson and, you know, Drew Carter and Luke Johnson, we got some guys from Portland that are excited to go play. But, you know, it's a big game for us. Gonzaga's playing really well. We got to get things straightened out here in the next 10 days to be ready for that game, you know, and hopefully we'll be healthy. But Mark does a great job. They're playing really well. And, I've always appreciated their consistency, you know, with their program. And although they play in a much different league than we do, they're very consistent. And, hopefully, you know, we'll be healthy and playing a lot better. But we do look forward to the challenge. And it will be a big challenge. They're good inside. You know, their guards are steady. And when they shoot threes well, they're really tough, you know. And Michigan, their one loss is, you know, when Michigan gets it going right now, they're so much further ahead than most teams that they're really a handful. So we know that it'll be a tough, tough game for us. We're going to have to play really well, but we are looking forward to the challenge.
Yeah, this will be a game that obviously is not being promoted by a traditional promoter. And the proceeds from the game will go to Gonzaga and go to Oregon. And that has to feel a little bit of good. Like there's a business there where, you know, potentially your program will receive some benefit from.
No, that is a big part of it. You know, we're in a 2-year agreement with Gonzaga. We're going to play in Seattle either next year or the following year, whichever works out best for both our schedules. And both gates are going to be split. So it is a different type of game, something that's becoming more commonplace with the NIL and everything. So, yes, it is a different thing. The two programs will benefit greatly from the attendance.
All right, Coach, I appreciate you making time for us. We'll see you at Moda Center on 10 days from now, December 21st, 3 o'clock. Gonzaga and Oregon mixing it up. Thanks for your time, Coach. Appreciate you.
All righty, John. Take care.
All right, take care. And there he goes, University of Oregon basketball coach Dana Altman with a very unusual game that is taking place on December 21. That game will be at Moda Center, 3 o'clock tip. It will be Mark Few and Gonzaga against Dana Altman and the University of Oregon in what should be a fun showcase. And again, like the background of this event, it's kind of cool. Like the promoters, like generally with a game like this, where you have this non-conference game that happens, is you have like promoters who are, you know, going to roll their sleeves up and do the promotional work and sell the game to TV. And then what are they going to do? They're going to end up recouping their investment and then some, because they are able to, go out and collect the ticket gate and keep it for themselves and keep that TV money for themselves and sell sponsorships of the event. And there's work involved. There's sweat equity involved in that promotion game. I'm not knocking it. But generally, the schools are just paid, you know, hey, you're going to get $50,000 or $100,000 to come play in this game. The difference with this Northwest Elite Showdown, this two-year series that Altman mentioned, is kind of the financial structure of the game and how it's going to be, how the money's going to be distributed. You know, you're going to have Oregon and Gonzaga playing in this game, but Oregon and Gonzaga essentially are the promoters of the game. They're going to split the proceeds with television revenue. They're going to split the proceeds with sponsorship dollars. They're going to split the gate, and they'll walk away with a much larger payout. The money that is gathered from this will help fund NIL and basketball and potentially some other sports at the University of Oregon. And Gonzaga will take their half and distribute it in their NIL ecosystem, and everybody will walk away better for it. Is this the future? Is this the blueprint? Is this the model? To be determined, because I think what we still need to see is we still need to see how successful it can be. I know the ticket sales are solid. You know, they're expecting 10 or 12,000 fans at Moda Center. That's great. They were never, I don't think, ever anticipating a sellout of the building. But they have, you know, they have various price levels. You can get down, you can still buy, you know, courtside seats for this thing. You can buy seats that are up a little further, a little cheaper, get you just the get-in price. But, you know, I'm really curious to see how it works out, because the, you know, the entrepreneurial side of this, you know, is interesting to me. I find it fascinating that there's the potential for Oregon and Gonzaga and maybe Oregon State and others someday to kind of make this part of their business model. Hour number two still ahead, where we'll talk with Carl Benson, the former WAC and Sunbelt commissioner. Plus, coming up next, we're going to talk about the cost of being a sports fan. It's getting out of hand, isn't it?